This is the LA Local Evening Update, keeping you caught up with the latest from KNX News. Check back each weekday afternoon for the LA Local's full daily briefing on what you need to know in SoCal.
It's 5:03. Good afternoon. Brian Douglas in for Rob Archer. Well, some Antelope Valley residents do not want a man known as the pillowcase rapist to be released into their neighborhood. And also, coming up, we'll speak live with a Middle East expert on what's next after Iran launches those missiles at Israel. That is all still on the way. First, tonight, the city council in Rancho Palos Verdes discussing how to divide $5 million from the county in response to the ongoing landslides. Natalie Tavidian has all the details.
The city geologist will present the latest on the land movement. City manager Adam Mirhanian says they'll hear several options from the geologist in hopes of finalizing a winterization plan as soon as possible, like where to add more dewatering wells, which traditionally have shown to slow land movement by pumping water out.
The amount of water that we're extracting from the ground is leading itself to a significant reduction in the rate of movement of the landslide, although the landslide has not stopped, so it still continues to move. So you're going to hear that from the city geologist today. And what is actually being tracked in the general area where the wells are located is we went from 13 inches of movement a week to approximately 8 inches a week.
As far as the money from LA County goes, some of the options for divvying up the $5 million in relief fund includes possibly using half the money to help hundreds impacted by the land movement by $10,000 per household. These would go to people who have had to spend thousands of dollars already to find off-grid solutions to gas, electricity, and internet.
Today, a judge heard why residents, law enforcement, and elected officials don't want a sexually violent predator released to a small Antelope Valley community. Emily Valdez was inside the Hollywood courtroom when it all went down.
Christopher Hubbard, known as the pillowcase rapist, has violently attacked 40 women in their homes. Spent the last quarter century in a mental hospital. Now he's being released, possibly to Juniper Hills. Residents are fighting it. Today in court, a judge said he had 600 letters to go over, and then he will make a decision. Cynthia Farrow is one of the residents who was here.
It's not unexpected. I went through this with Grassmeyer, who lives across the street. I came to court. They did not make the decision, but you can kind of tell the decision is made. And
that he's going to be placed there.
Yeah, because that's how it was with Grassmeyer, and he was placed there.
And, who's Grassmeyer?
Calvin Grassmeyer is an SVP that lives directly across the street from me.
A sexually violent predator. You already got one right across the street?
Yes. Yes. Oh. And they moved him in, I believe, 3.5 years ago. And
how's that going?
Horrible. They did put up a wooden privacy fence. Before that, he would be walking around in the yard all the time. It was horrible to see him. Very scary.
And they say there's already another sexually violent predator who lives in their community. So if Hubbard goes there, that would make three.
Now, the judge did not indicate when he will actually make his decision. Man is facing assault charges after attacking three people in Pacific Palisades, including a magician performing at a children's birthday party. Karen Adams has that story.
The man identified as Brian Stinnett is accused of attacking two men, beating up one right in his doorway pretty badly before turning his rage on Richard Rebuffo, a.k.a. California Joe, the Explorer Magician. He was performing at a four-year-old's birthday party in Rustic Canyon Park when he was sucker punched.
I would love to see him get the help he needs, but I also know that's not the society in which we live in. You know, it's safer for him and safer for us. You know, if he just goes to jail and he's in jail and he gets no help for whatever demons are plaguing his brain, then eventually he's going to get out and nothing's going to change, you know, and somebody else is going to get hurt. And, you know, by that point, whose fault is it?
Stinnett remains in jail as of now. Well, the man accused in the LA Metro bus hijacking appeared in court today for his arraignment, but that arraignment now postponed. Lamont Campbell charged yesterday with 12 counts. You heard it here live on KNX News. For that hijacking and murder of the passenger on the bus last week, LA County District Attorney George Gascon announced those charges, including murder, one count of carjacking, kidnapping during a carjacking, assault with a handgun, attempted murder, robbery, and of course, the list goes on. Campbell was wheeled into the courtroom today. He was actually strapped in, I don't know if you've ever seen that, he was in a safety chair, all strapped in. But again, that arraignment postponed until October 29th. He remains in jail in lieu of $5.5 million bail. Campbell faces 91 years to life in jail now if he is convicted. Two men believed to have committed dozens of crimes throughout Southern California. They've finally been arrested. San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department say they first started investigating some after-hour robberies at businesses that led them to Marvin Denson and Justin Clayton, both of Los Angeles. Investigators believe those two are responsible for over 30 commercial burglaries in San Bernardino, L.A., and also Riverside counties. So to come on Nonstop News 5, we're less than an hour away from the vice presidential debate, and we've got a preview to get you ready for that. That's coming up as Nonstop News at 5 continues. Nonstop News at 5, presented by My Lemon Law Lawyer. Text LEMON to 40333 for a free case review.
Iran attacks Israel. The latest on KNX News, 97.1 FM.
Well, it happened just hours ago. Israel vowing to hit back now after being hit hard. After more than 180 ballistic missiles this time, not drones, but ballistic missiles were fired from Iran at targets inside Israel. A lot of those were intercepted. Some did make it through. No deaths reported so far. Right now, we're joined by Eric Loeb of Florida International University. He's joining us live. He's an expert on Iran and the Middle East. Eric, thank you for joining us. And I think the big question is, what's next?
Well, we're all asking that question, and the situation is highly fluid. Events are developing so rapidly, it's honestly difficult to keep up with. But in terms of, we do have a precedent in terms of a direct attack that Iran had launched back in April, followed by a targeted Israeli response that had hit an airbase in Isfahan without being more expansive and hitting nuclear facilities or higher value assets. The question now is will Israel, having vowed to respond in a more expansive and intensive way in the coming hours or even days?
And that leads me to the next question. I think we're all wondering, so if Israel does retaliate, which they say they are, does that mean Iran now has to save face and they have to retaliate once again? Is this something that's just going to go on? Is this ever going to stop?
That's another excellent question that we're all asking ourselves, because after the Iranians launched today's attack, they said that if Israel does respond, and this is the political and especially military establishment, that Iran would respond in kind. And so it leads to open questions in terms of how we end this vicious cycle of violence in the region. Between Israel and Iran, and even looking at Israeli operations and kinetic activity in Lebanon, Yemen, Gaza, and elsewhere.
Let me ask you this. Israel is going to respond. Let's just assume that. Do you think, response-wise, do you think an attack on Iran's nuclear facilities would be open, or maybe even Iran's oil infrastructure, either one of those, could they be viable targets?
Nothing's off the table at this point, and based on reports, intelligence reports, and analysis that has been circulating, those targets are certainly on the table. Nuclear facilities, which not just the Israelis, but even the Americans have been itching to get at as Iran has expanded its program, particularly since 2018. And there's even been reports, as you indicated, that Israel can even hit critical infrastructure in the country outside of nuclear facilities, including oil production and energy facilities, crippling the country's power.
You know, I noticed maybe you saw these videos, too, in the streets of Tehran, people celebrating. Of course, a lot of that could be staged. You know, we just don't know. How are the people of Iran, and I don't know, obviously you're not there, how do they feel about all this? I mean, there's people in Israel, I know, protesting against all of this happening to begin with. What about the people in Iran, the citizens?
Well, it's very polarized in Iran, even in Lebanon and other parts of the Arab world. You're seeing some celebrations that Iran has responded to what they see as Israeli attacks on Lebanon and Palestinian territories. And then there's others, even within the Iranian leadership, who were very hesitant and even opposed to this attack and are worried that it's going to just drag the country into an unnecessary conflict with no end game in sight.
When does the Middle East calm down? I mean, this has been going on for centuries. I mean, you can go back, forever. There's always been dispute here. When does this all end? And who is the main game player of ending this, Israel or Iran?
Well, I would say that it's Israel, given that Israel is the more powerful side, that it's particularly over the last 2 weeks with the tactical gains that it's made against Hezbollah in Lebanon, and even expanding military operations as far as Yemen that we saw over the weekend. The question is when will Israel feel that it's achieved its military objectives? I mean, now we're looking at a very high possibility of a ground invasion in Lebanon, which has already begun on a limited scale. And so the question is, you know, conversations between Tel Aviv or Jerusalem and Washington is when enough is going to be enough. It's really the open question moving forward.
I don't see any ending to this anytime soon. Eric Loeb, thank you so much. Florida University, I appreciate it. He's an expert on Iran and the Middle East.
The CBS News Vice Presidential Debate on KNX News 97.1 FM.
That's Tim Walz versus J.D. Vance at the top of the hour, live from New York City. The debate moderated by Nora O'Donnell and Margaret Brennan. We're going to bring it to you live and in full when it begins, again, right at 6 o'clock. Charles Feldman, Margaret Carrero got a preview of our Countdown 2024 show from political analyst A.B. Stoddard of The Bulwark and Ryan Wiggins of The Lincoln Project.
Ryan, I want to ask you, I mean, the moderators, unlike the last presidential debate, will not be fact-checking tonight. So it is essentially up to Walz and Vance to fact-check one another?
That's kind of what I'm understanding, too. I mean, you know, the thing is, though, I think it's going to be more important for them to be getting their messaging out than it's going to be fact-checking. Yes, it would be a big misstep of Tim Walz to not bring up how all of the things that J.D. Vance has said about women and about abortion and about women's rights and women's roles and women who are postmenopausal. It's like every woman in this country is like, what, would you please stop obsessing over us? So, I mean, I think that, you know, that is, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out tonight. I do believe that it'll be a good show. I mean, like I said, I think that they have to stick to their messages. I think that it's going to be kind of concerning for J.D. Vance that Donald Trump has said he is going to be live tweeting the entire thing. I think if I were J.D. and I had been called out from the stage by my boss at one point, I think I would be very careful on what I said on the stage. So it's just going to be interesting to see how nerves play in here. It's going to be interesting to see how likability plays in here. I mean, Walz may not be as good of a debater as J.D. Vance maybe will be, but he's way more likable. He's more relatable. He's somebody that America can see themselves sitting down and talking to. And J.D. Vance has not done that. He's come across as exactly that, weird. So it's going to be interesting. Let's see how it plays out.
Yeah. And AB, on that thought pattern of likability, there was some recent polling that showed Walz really viewed more favorably than Vance, particularly among like Midwestern voters. More people felt the words honest and trustworthy described Walz than Vance. Can Vance shift that perception about himself tonight?
I think it'll be hard because it's just kind of his way is to be. He has a very smug quality and he gets prickly and defensive. Although I think he's smooth. I mean, I think he, you know, he's a trained lawyer and will be a good debater. But, you know, it would help him if he could bring some charm. I've just never seen him do it. And I do think the point about likability is important. I think some voters who are coming to this, and Ryan said most people who are coming are people who are just politically engaged and sort of want to watch this. And that's probably true. But I think if people come to it and they're undecided, they're looking for a gut check at this point. They're probably not listening to policy details and they want to know that, you know, people are normal. And I do think that if Walz remains likable, that will help Walz and Harris. If Vance can just come off a little, you know, a little more warmly, like I said, that might help him. I don't know. It undoes the damage that he's done to himself and his favorability numbers. But if I were Vance, that would be my goal tonight.
All right. A.B. Stoddard, editor and columnist at The Bulwark, and Ryan Wiggins, chief of staff for The Lincoln Project.
Our debate coverage starts at 5:45, so it's coming up in just about 20 minutes. We'll have guests from both sides of the political aisle. The debate itself will start right about 6 o'clock. Let's get a look at our money right now. And here is Nancy Lyons.
The conflict in the Middle East resulted in losses on Wall Street. The Dow is down 173 or 0.4%. The S&P lost 54, 0.9%. The Nasdaq gave up 279 or 1.5%. Nike's incoming CEO, Elliott Hill, has his work cut out for him. After the bell, the company reported quarterly sales that fell short of Wall Street's expectations. Revenue declined 10% in Nike's fiscal first quarter. CNN has rolled out its paywall for its website, and the cost to subscribe is $3.99 a month. You'll be asked to pay up after having access to several free articles. Disney is consolidating studios that make TV shows, combining the drama and comedy teams at ABC and Hulu Originals, and folding its signature production banner into 20th Television. The changes will result in the loss of about 30 jobs. That's on top of the 300 job losses announced last week at the corporate level. I'm Bloomberg's Nancy Lyons, KNX News 97.1 FM.
And that's your nonstop news at 5 for Tuesday, October 1st, presented by My Lemon Law Lawyer. Text Lemon to 40333 for a free case review.